Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
All right, Juice, you know how I always say I've got a guy for everything?
Yeah, yes, you do, Big Seth. You've got a guy for printing, a guy for cigars, a guy for, what was it, custom pool flamingos?
Don't knock the flamingos. But when it comes to remodeling your home, my guy is Alvaro Freitas and his crew at Casabella Design Group.
Yes, your favorite contractor, right?
Well, he is my favorite contractor, and he'll be yours as well with just one call. Casabella has been remodeling homes in South Florida for over 20 years. Kitchens, bathrooms, full home renovations, even outdoor spaces that'll make you forget that you live on that cul-de-sac.
And they don't just make things look good. I mean, they handle permits, planning, construction, all the stuff that makes you want to pull your hair out.
Easy on the hair, okay?
Yeah, right, right.
But trust me, Alvaro shows up with a plan, a crew, and he may even bring you a cafecito. The man is a machine.
Yeah, so if you're ready to love your home again, or, I mean, you just want to make your neighbors jealous, head to CasabellaDG.com and schedule your free consultation.
That's CasabellaDG.com and tell Alvaro the Fish Tank sent you. He might even give you a deal, or at least a hug.
Casabella Design Group, proud partner of the Fish Tank. Let's build something beautiful together.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Dive up in that fish tank. Who that? Sitting down with Seth Living. Seth. OJ. Juice Man. Ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans. Yeah. Golf fans. Number one. Of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
It's Wednesday night, which means it is Fish Tank Live, presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group. Seth Levitt here live at the Casabella Design Group studios.
Where else were you, Big Seth?
Well, where else would I
were
be?
You not live? I mean, I don't know.
I could be. Well, we have seen pre-recorded conversations here on Fish Tank Live, and I think we might be due for one again this evening, so I'm just putting it out there. In any event, as always, I am joined by the man with the best hands in the live podcast business. You just heard him. He is OJ McDuffie. Juice, we got a full house tonight.
Yes, we do, man. A lovely, lovely, good-looking group of guys, man. You know, I wouldn't date any of them but Big Seth. But, you know, I think that
Or no we ain't dating what, any man, you either. We ain't dating you either. It's okay.
I'm not here to judge, gentlemen. I'm not here to judge.
It's their own Big Seth, you know, but no, always, man, a great cast of characters, man. And I can't wait for you to introduce some of them. Not all of them, just some of them, you know. I mean,
all right,
I won't tell
I'll be selective.
The ones that I don't want to be, you know, we'll go that way.
All right. No, you want to let me know? Can we turn off the screens of the ones you don't want to introduce?
No,
no, we
great
won't
guys,
do that. Still
guys.
From Michigan in his Mario Kart chip. Look, we lost one. One man down. The legendary Savak in the house. Chad Van Horn. Maybe he's here. Maybe he's not. We'll see how the night goes. Mike Oliva has opened the doors again to the backyard, and he's let us all in. So we appreciate that, Mike Oliva from Dolphins.
Absolutely,
Talk.
Thanks, Mike.
And the king of Dolphins YouTube, he is Dougley Durong, diving in for, we got him for about 30 minutes or until his baby girl starts screaming for him. So, Dougley, thanks for joining us, man.
I appreciate you. So, I texted you. I was like, oh, she's asleep. And I went and sat
Can
down.
Can we start now?
She came out of the room and was like, "Where'd you go?" I was like, "Just back in the room."
We've been there, Dougie. We've been there, bro. We've been there, man.
We definitely have.
I got a 4-month-old, so I'm not dealing with that yet. Fortunately, my wife is taking care of that. But I'm looking forward to those times, though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, she starts crawling and then walking, Chad. She's gonna be right up on you. It's a great feeling, but damn, sometimes it's like, yo, chill.
Once they get wheels, it is a different deal. That is for sure. So I kind of had the show. I had my notes. I was preparing for tonight, and then Adam Schefter does it again. Shocker. Which I want to get to that in a second. But he lets the world know that Aaron Brewer and the Dolphins have reportedly, and if he's the one reporting it, you can pretty much count on it, have reached an agreement on a 3-year, $52.5 million extension. Say it again, 3 years, $52.5 million extension, includes a $37 million guarantee. Aaron Brewer, building block number 2 in the John Eric Sullivan era. He told us there were certain building blocks. He mentioned Devon Achan, contract extended. He mentioned Aaron Brewer, contract extended. Dougley, how excited should we be that Aaron Brewer, can we be as excited as he was doing cartwheels and backflips at practice today?
I didn't know that big man can move like that.
That was impressive.
How about that?
I think this is it's a good contract. It's something that, you know, the Dolphins are doing it right, and they're doing it right for the right people. We signed Devon Achan, like we were talking about him being one of the pillars that they mentioned, and not even like a top 5 guaranteed contract. It's actually like, I think, 8th ranked among running backs. And now you have Aaron Brewer, who is getting $37 million total guarantee. That's only 4th ranked. So, right. You know, we're not resetting the market. We're doing this very smart with how we are giving these contracts out. So I'm happy they did it. You know, we don't know the full breakdown of the contract, but, you know, to have him at least for a minimum of 2 more years after this season on this team, you know, I'm happy. I'm very happy with this one, especially because he does have some familiarity with Malik Willis, because they did play a little bit in Tennessee together.
Okay. And Mike, what do you think about these? The pecking order of getting these deals done. You know, I mean, Achan first, Brewer second. Obviously, they got to work on Jordan Brooks, man. So what do you think about, you know, them prioritizing? It seems like offense, like they should, Big Seth, first and foremost, before they handle anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, look, we did draft 3 linebackers. So Jordan Brooks can wait a little bit here, but Achan is by far their best player on the team. They need to keep him, and you know, and then here paying Aaron Brewer today makes a lot of sense, because he's just been so stinking good since the first day he got here. He's been the rock on that offensive line, which is at times has kind of been up and down. He's just been rock solid here for 2 seasons, and you look at this offseason for the Dolphins under new management, and you kind of live by the motto, you can't fix stupid, but you can divorce it. Greer.
Damn. Shots fired.
You got to pay somebody, and they're paying the right people. Hopefully he's next. But, it was a no-brainer. And you look at that offensive line, if Kaden Proctor is what we hope that he is, this offensive line will go from a weakness to a strength, whether Austin Jackson stays healthy or not. I think they got 4 guys there who hopefully can be very good.
Real quick, Seth, just a quick legal zone point. Sometimes it is cheaper to keep her. So, let's not just rush into that divorce. Maybe talk to some people. Maybe do couple therapy. I don't know. But sometimes
not with those 4 names. They had to be divorced, those 4 names.
Depends on the prenup.
Those 4 names had to go.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you, Chad, for getting us on. Early, and I have a feeling early and often with the legal zone. I love it.
Right.
I love it. Juice, what do you think about it, man? When you look at those big guys up front, shoot, Brewer's going to look like the kicker standing next to some of those dudes up there. I mean, he's technically undersized. You know, he's a large, strong man, but for, you know, centers and offensive linemen, but so athletic. I'm interested to see. He was such a perfect fit for Mike McDaniel's offense. I had to chuckle when I saw The Athletic, I think, wrote an article about Mike McDaniel and Butch Berry are retooling the Chargers offensive line.
Yeah, you sent me that. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I kind of had to chuckle. But Brewer was such a perfect fit because he could get out and go and you know, get second level and all the different things that McDaniel liked to do that maybe not everybody on that line had the ability to do, but Brewer certainly could do it. But this looks like this is more of a kind of ground and pound, and they're trying to just have those organic grass-fed behemoths, you know, up there. And he doesn't necessarily fit that mold, but they clearly see the value.
Bro, I mean, we're so good right now, center left. You know what I mean? I think Savaii Nye is in the position that he wants to be in on the right side of guard. And
right.
You know, Austin Jackson, when he's been in there, he's been really good. And we know, you know, people talk about Austin Jackson all they want. But when he was out, it was noticeable. And that tells you how well he was doing for us. But can you imagine those two big uglies on the left side washing down and Aaron Brewer pulling like my man Dwight Stevenson? You know what I mean? You know, and doing some of the things that centers just can't do like Aaron Brewer can do. What they've done is what I see the Dolphins are doing right now is they're doing what wins football games, man. They're trying to get their defense better. The draft showed a lot of that. Get some young guys that are on the defensive line from last year. But when you solidify that offensive line with guys like, you know what I mean, you know, with Patrick Paul, with Caden Proctor, and now Aaron Brewer being in, you know, in the fold for, you know, a few more years, that's where your bread is buttered, man. Where the Dolphins have struggled over and over and over again is their inability to go on the road and win games and, you know, in hostile environments, or in inclement weather. Now you've got to, if you start building the offensive line and the defense, those things, it's a cliche, but, man, they travel, man. Those guys can play anywhere. So now you've got Aaron Brewer happy. He's going to be in the offseason right now, you know, enjoying his few weeks off, whatever they have, and then he's going to come into training camp as a leader, as he's always been. He's shown up all the time, and you reward that stuff, man. They picked out the three or four guys that they thought that were key players to keep around. Achane, obviously, Aaron Brewer, and I'm sure they're working on Brooks. And get this one done. Like, you know, this sends these guys – it really does. It sends these guys into the off-season program or, you know, before training camp program, you know, feeling really good about what's happening with this football team, man. So I'm super pumped about it. You know, I mean, I think that – and everybody that's in that backfield, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers going to have time to do some things. When you start solidifying this offensive line like we're doing right now, that is going to be huge for everybody that's involved, man, because nothing gets done unless we have a solid offensive line in front of us. It's just it's a mess, and we've seen a mess before, and I think they're trying to tighten that mess up right now.
We've definitely seen a mess before. Speaking of which, we've seen a financial mess. In fact, they're trying to work their way out of it. They are redoing some contracts. Doug, I like that you brought up that these both have been contracts that have been it's a lot of money, mm-hmm. but they're relatively favorable when you compare them to other leaders in those positions across the league. But what do you think about not only, you know, are they re-signing these guys? It feels like John Eric Sullivan is kind of like, here's the things I'm going to do, and now he's doing them. I mean, he really told us the plan, and he's living it out thus far. How do you digest that? I mean, that's got to make you feel pretty good when your general manager is telling you those things.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear a guy, you know, mention players and mention who's important to this team and actually back it up by showing them that they're important by locking them down for, like I say, minimum of an extra 2 years on top of this year. And like we were talking about, you know, they have a really big dead cap. It's the biggest in the NFL at $179 million. But then next year they are third most in cap space with $108 million. So, you know, they'll have the money to spend and play around with. Now, we don't know what Brewer's money is going to look like next year, so that $108 million might be a little bit lower. But I'm glad that they're finally doing things the right way, and we don't have a general manager in there saying the phrase he has the right to test free agency. Whenever Greer said he has the right to test free agency, we all knew he was gone. He ain't coming back. So it's nice to see, you know, them mention the pillars and then and sticking to it and being like, we want to sign these guys. Now, the Brooks situation, that's a little different because if you noticed with Achane and Brewer, they kind of tweak their contract to get some cap space this year. They didn't touch Brooks' contract. So we'll see how that pans out. And like Mike said, you know, we did draft a bunch of linebackers and we drafted Jacob Rodriguez. So, you know, I'd love to keep Brewer here and they did Brooks here and they did incorporate him a lot, especially in the draft and like promos and stuff. So I'm pretty sure they're going to try and keep him, but I'm sure if a team like Dallas offers them something they can't refuse, he might be traded.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what we had a older group of linebackers, you know, except when I was making the transition in the Dolphins, and they brought in a guy named Zach Thomas, and Zach Thomas, he relieved the duties of older linebackers. I think Jack Del Rio, might have been on our roster at that point. And he was all right, you know what I mean? But then you get a young gun that, you know, that Essence can't ask for very much money because he's under rookie contracts. Mm-hmm. And also a young gun that, you know, that's going to give you some years that you feel good about things. And that's what happens a lot of times, man. So I'm going to tell you this. I mean, Jordan Brooks has to be careful here. I mean, he really does, man, because when you – everybody in the league, when you're playing for an NFL team, when you see guys – like, take, for example, myself. I'm looking at myself as a wide receiver. And I see three receivers drafted in the draft. Somebody's ass is gone, Big Seth.
Right, right.
Somebody's ass is in trouble, you know? that's when in the draft, when they do that, they tell you somebody's ass is in trouble, man. And then when you see that, like you said, they'll be like in the linebacker position, somebody's ass is not going to be around, especially they can be great players, but when their money is a big issue, there's always things that determine whether they're going to be around. If you're causing problems off the field, mm-hmm. if your money's too high, you know what I mean? Those are the two of the things that could cost you, whether you're good or not. They might have to move on from you. So it's going to be interesting, like you said, how they handle the situation. When you draft in that position, I don't care. A rookie can come in there and play. Jimmy Johnson played Zach Thomas like right away. So rookies can come in and take that position over when you've got a solidified group of guys around him. You got a veteran guys in front of him. You know, you got the secondary is pretty solid behind him. And you can put a rookie in there somewhere. Tough position to be in there, but I'm telling you this, though. Jordan Brooks needs to be very careful about how he handles this situation. And I know the Dolphins will as well.
It's interesting you brought that up, too. Now, he's a Texas Tech guy. And Rodriguez, Texas Tech guy. Zach was a Texas Tech guy when he took Del Rio's job. But Del Rio was not a Tech guy. But he was Jimmy Johnson's hand-picked, like, I need to bring one of my guys in here to set the tone, set a culture.
Right.
And he was gone.
Seth, we might talk about Texas Tech a little later in the legal zone, too. Like, there's a little litigation going on. Oh, finally, Sam. Son of a bitch. this guy finally watches. And yes, I didn't cry, but I offered to fight a few people. Thank you, Sam, for watching. Thank you for your support.
He cried in the car.
As long as it wasn't caught on camera, it didn't happen, Juice.
Juice, you know that, man. You know, I told you that in confidence, first off. I was watching your television in your car crying.
That's messed up. So he did cry when he won that mirror ball trophy. I will say that. All right. So OTAs have wrapped up. We're going into summer now. Okay. What is our biggest takeaway from what we've seen in this offseason? Because the real stuff starts when training camp opens up. Halfley keeps telling us we're not playing real football yet. But what have we seen? It's really been a complete 180 for this organization. New head coach, new general manager, new thought process. Troy Aikman's in. We see, you know, new quarterback. All of these things have changed. I'd love to hear from everybody. Mike, we'll start with you. What's your one big takeaway thus far, what we've seen through minicamp OTAs?
No, it's fine. I think this is the team, though, because even since June 1st, it's been, 9 days? They got all that money. And, yes, they have to pay the rookie class. They signed all the rookies pretty quick. And I saw today AJ Espinosa, who they had in on a visit, signed with Philadelphia. Like, anyone thinking that they're going to go out there and sign a guy, it ain't happening.
Right.
This is the team. And I think, you know, it's going to be a young team. it's obviously going to be a young team. And I think this is it. I don't see them signing anyone in June or July. And I think throughout mini camp, we've heard the reports. This guy looked good. This guy looks like he lost weight. This guy looked like he put on muscle, this, that, and the other. You can talk about all that stuff to your blue in the face. This is the team. I think this is the team at the end of the day. I don't think they're looking to go out there and bring anyone else in. And they're going to sink or swim with this young team this year. And it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be exciting to watch at times because I think with a young team, you just don't know. But I think the big takeaway is they're playing the hand that they're dealt. Great. And this is it.
All right. This is your team. It's like that scene from Hoosiers where they all want Jimmy. Jimmy's out sitting there just shooting on that
Jimmy Chipwood.
Jimmy Chipwood's by the farm. He's just shooting, and everyone's like, where's Jimmy? And Gene Hackman has to grab the mic.
I play for
this
coach.
Is your team.
Yeah.
This is your team. Let's worry about who's here instead of who's not. I like that. Doug, what's your big takeaway?
I could say, you know, there's some positives in there that I was happy with, like the way the defense is playing, but you know, it's easier for the defense to get in a groove. Yeah. I'm liking
Juice says they cheat, Doug. Juice just says the defense cheats.
I wouldn't doubt it. I like the turnover.
There you go. I ain't lying.
From Jacob Rodriguez getting a punch out today. The other thing I'm noticing, and you know, you could take this good or bad, is there's still a disconnect between Malik and the receivers that they definitely need to work on. You know, the 6 weeks that they have before training camp, because you could see it in some of the passes and, you know, how the timing's off. Like the one interception, Ben Sims wasn't ready for it. And, you know, there's some other things. So, you know, they are getting better. So I will say that is something you hear every, you know, even mandatory minicamp, you heard like progressions of the offense was getting better. They're starting to click. So we'll see how training camp goes. You know, I'm excited to see that, to get a real understanding of what this team is.
Yeah, you know, Big Seth, I mean, it's going to be – defense is always going to be ahead of the offense, and you kind of want that. If your offense is running around and beating the hell out of your defense right away, new offense, new personnel,
right?
That's a problem right there already. So if your defense – like, and look, here's what happens, man. When installs go in and they talk about the installs going on both sides of the ball. And don't think that the defensive installs are the same – to counter what the offensive installs are. Defense is installing goal line when offense is installing four wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So they know exactly what the install is. And you hope that the defense we should all hope that the defense is ahead of our offense right now. And we hope that our offense is ahead of any defense they're going to play in the future. That's how it should work out, man, honestly. And so that's why I would say they're cheating, because I know when I'm running the route before the ball's even lined up, and Sam Madison's like, "Watch the in route, watch the in route." How about you know it's the in route? They told you already in installs that this is what we're running, this combination right here.
It might be two bells.
I didn't do anything to tell you that I was running in route, other than the fact you saw us line up in trips this way, motion away, once running down the seam, and I'm running in route.
Juice, it's on the car. They're holding the car,
right? You know they are. It's almost like it's almost like a scout team card being held up to them, Seth. But that's what they get, man. You know, but I do think that, you know, no matter what, and like Mike said, that we're pretty much set. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with us being set right now. What else can we do right now? You know, we're paying our guys that we want to pay. It's going to cost us to bring in a free agent. You know, I'm a big Marlins fan. I've been watching the Marlins. They got a very, very young roster all the time, and they're fun to watch. Hopefully we have the same type of team with these young guys that are going to be fun to watch, man. You know, just don't expect too much from them, but just let them grow. Let them have some fun for a little bit. Hopefully we have some fun along the way, man. But it's going to be some growing pains. But I tell you this, I think we're going to be better than everybody thinks we are. As long as that defense is good.
Yeah.
As long as that defense is good, you know, we'll be competitive. We might not win them, you know, not find a way to win at the end. But as long as that defense is good, we have a chance. So
yeah, I think it's a team that's going to compete. I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah,
for sure.
You just talked about offense and defense. Sam Marcoux wants to know what you think about the punter and kicker battles.
Yeah, you know what? I was looking at that. You know, I was checking that out, you know, and I really feel like, I mean.
How about Jason Sanders?
You know, Zane Gonzalez is like, you know what I mean? He's solid. But what Riley Patterson did last year was exceptional, you know, when Jason Sanders was out for all season long. So, you know, I'm going with Riley in this situation, Big Seth. You know, I'm a big special teams kind of guy.
Yeah,
you know, but I don't even know who the hell's a punter right now. I don't even know.
There's two.
I think one's from Atlanta, I think.
All right, well, the hell with them anyway. It don't matter.
Well, I think you're going to see some punting.
You might be on the field a lot this year. We should probably know their names.
Last year, last week, punting ain't a bad thing.
Actually, now we're down to one punter. His name is Bradley Pinion.
My opinion on Pinion is that if he can hold right for Sarnie, if Sarnie feels like he can hold correctly, I don't care how he punts. That's all that matters.
Chad, is that's like a Yinzer? The Pinion's behind the can that be a Pittsburgh thing?
Absolutely. It sounds like actually we should trade for him. We'll give you Aaron Rodgers.
You can keep Aaron Rodgers.
We're good.
Yeah. In fact, right, you can just there
appreciate
it is.
Appreciate the love, Chad, but no, we're good.
No doubt. My big takeaway as I'm sitting here, as I'm going back and forth between the StreamYard and YouTube and on the side recommended videos, Mike McDaniel's first mic'd up as Chargers OC. My big takeaway is it feels like the organization's being run by adults. Yeah. That's my big takeaway.
You ain't wrong on that one.
Yes, sir.
I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see what happens, you know, wins, losses, and I'm certainly not using this season's final record as the final judgment, but it just seems like they're being run by adults. So I'm excited for that. It feels like football again. I had mentioned it, and I want to talk about Halfley here in a second, but at his recent presser, they asked him about Storm Duck, and I forget the other guy. And, you know, how are they progressing? He's like, I wish they'd be coming along a little quicker. And, he wasn't lousy about it, but he just kind of dropped it out there. And it wasn't one of those where we heard for 4 years that every guy, I know the guy and the character of the guy, and they're going to work as hard as they can. And they would be on the field because they're absolute warriors. Like, come on, man. Like, some of these guys need to get their ass on the field. And sometimes, like, Juice, if anybody knows about injuries and being talked into playing or misled into playing, you know, and all those things. But the reality is that professional football, they don't want a bunch of guys laying around in that training room. And right. So, you know, there's that whole hurt versus injured thing. And I think there's an expectation that some of these guys need to get their butts on the field because they're needed.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you can't make the club be in the tub, Big Seth, and that's a tough deal. It really is, especially when you are dealing with a new regime. You know, you're dealing with a new regime here, and I think that is always an issue when you're leaving a season hurt, coming into an off-season hurt, and everybody's gaining ground on you or passing you on that depth chart. Man, that depth chart is, you know, it's gaining ground. OTAs, mini camps, you know, getting ready for training camps. Last thing you want to do when you got a new team, a new owner, I mean, you are a new head coach, new GM, a new staff, is be a guy that's fighting your way back from an injury, you know. And the guys, that's what these guys are dealing with. And it's tough. It really is, man. I got cut because I couldn't get back from my injury. You know, dealing with, not necessarily a new staff, but, you know, new head coach, and Dave wants that, you know. So it's tough on those guys. But I think he wants those guys back sooner, you know, healthier, so they can go out there and compete. I don't know what's going on. I haven't been out of training camp. Not going out there until training camp, you know. But other guys are making leaps and bounds, like in terms of getting better out there on the football field, because there's a new scheme, there's a new everything. You can watch all the film you want, you can be in all the meetings you want, but until you get out there on the field and able to do it, and you're going to be behind, because it's a whole different world out there when you're actually taking on the live bullets, man. So I think more than anything, you know, their health. It's going to be a detriment to them if they can't get out there and start performing sooner than later. But now you're going to get into training camp. How many reps are you going to get when training camp comes? Don't think that they can say there's no depth chart. There's already a depth chart being made right now. When they go to training camp, there's going to be groups of guys. You're going to come in that first day. I remember that first day when they unveil, you know, who's in group one, group two, group three, and, you know, the other ones are fill-ins. It's going to be there. And then if you're not up there at the top, what kind of reps are you going to get? It's just tough reps to get there. And who are you going to be working with? You know, I know we're talking more about half, and I know what half is talking about with the quarterback situation with the wide receivers, but that happens in all positions on whether you're working with the first group, second group, third group. So you better get your ass out there on the field, man, and, you know, and find a way to show and tell. But a lot of times you show and tell against lesser, you know, competition.
Right.
Is it good? So I think more than anything, he's hoping those guys to be healthier leading into that last little mini camp, you know, the OTA to finish it off and things like that. And so, you know, you're behind the eight ball right now. If you're hurt right now in the Dolphin locker room, you're behind the eight ball behind some of these guys that have been there for all phases so far.
Yep.
Juice, where were you on the depth chart when you first came in as a first round pick?
I was second group. But I was with Danny. I worked with Danny Marino one series in practice, and you know, he called a play that wasn't in the playbook. I didn't know it, so I went back to my second group and I stayed there for about 6 weeks.
So you were aware at the time, like where you were in the pecking order, or you were just figuring it out?
Well, you know, and Seth, don't say a freaking word. Don't ding me too far. Because I was a first round pick, I had a lot more love than some of the other guys did, Chad. You know what I mean? So, but I once I learned the playbook, though, I was a stone's throw away from being in any position because I knew every single position. So once I got in that book, once they told me that, you know, you learn every position, Scott Miller, where you at, Scotty? We're looking for you, Scott Miller. Though once I learned every position, I was able to, you know, I was second team for the first half of the first year.
So our guy Doug's got to bounce here in a second. So I just want to ask you one more thing, Doug, before you got to go. There were a lot of different things discussed that I thought were really good that came out of Halfley's most recent press availability. But he kind of said something under his breath. I'm glad that Alan Poupard followed up. They were talking about the inner squad practices.
Right.
And he kind of mentioned, I don't like doing 2 days. I only like doing 1 day each. And he said it under his breath, and then they came back, and he's like, you guys like 2 days? Why do you like 2 days and the whole thing? And then he explained why he likes to only do it 1 day. What was your take from that? And as a guy who likes to travel to those practices, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I loved what he said because, you know, he right now he's more worried about installing things and getting stuff right and, you know, getting the tempo and, you know, a lot of what we saw with him mic'd up is him talking about communicating, talk. So right now he's not worried about, you know, let's show who we are and let's do this. And he's more worried about, okay, I need to see what we have. I need to make sure you guys understand this and that. So, you know, the thing that clicked the most to me that he said is a lot of times when you have two joint practices back to back, if you struggle day one, you come out day two going harder to try to make up for day one. And that's where injuries can happen. And when he said that, I was like, yeah, I agree 1,000% with that. You know, right now the joint practices and preseason is more about seeing what we have and competing against someone that's not someone that you like you said, you know, how many times did Sam Madison know you were going to run that route? Well, it's because you ran that route how many times in practice? So he knew it was coming. That's what these joint practices and preseason are for. So, you know, I actually like it. And I wouldn't be surprised if next season he might do two. But right now, he's not worried about that. Right now, he's worried about installing the offense, installing the defense, and making sure these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Because you think about it, like Dudley's talked about, man, you know, Half's answer was, like, incredible. You know, Jimmy Johnson, I know he went and hung out with punk-ass Jimmy Johnson. That's okay. I'm so cool with that.
I was going to ask that. I was like, ah, let me.
Yeah. The fuck, I got a ding for ass?
I don't know. I'm counting that one. You said
punk ass? Does that?
Yeah,
is that
punk ass. I don't know. That one felt like a shit.
That was an aggressive ass.
It was aggressive.
It was very aggressive.
I got you. But, you know, like Dudley said, man, we're talking about, you know, two practices against a team. Once if I get the best of you today, next day we're fighting no matter what. There's going to be something going on and, you know, you're risking all these other things. And so why go through all that? And I'm with it. Plus, I don't know if you can't even practice twice a day anyways. We did two-a-days, and Seth, tell me if I'm wrong here because you were there. We did two-a-day joints, didn't we?
We did.
It was morning and afternoon joint. Then morning and afternoon joint. I think we did, or maybe one the next day, maybe three total.
But it was a lot. And it's funny that we're talking. And Doug, if you got to bounce, you don't have to. Yeah, you can just kind of
appreciate you, Doug.
Like, I appreciate you guys letting me on, man. We'll do this again.
He wants to be on a table at the end, so if he has to sneak out, he doesn't have to make a scene about it. He can just sneak out. We don't hold it against him. Great to have you, Doug.
I would tell
people to go to your channel, but they're already there.
They need to come here. They need to come here. I'm going to bring them here.
Send a few over.
I'll send a few.
All right. See you guys. All right. See you, bud. So. Oh man. No, I just remember that first year of Jimmy's first year in 96, Izzo got in a fight 2 days in a row against Washington. And he got in a fight against Tampa in those joint practices. Two days in a row against Washington, though. That was classic.
They didn't have a scouting report on Izzo out yet, did they? They were like, oh, this dude right here is gonna mix it up.
No, they definitely did not.
Yeah. They tell David, I know he was there. I know where Half was hanging out. You know what I mean? You know, at the Big Chill. I'm not going to promote the Big Chill, even though it is. You know,
So we know where you stand on that. I'm curious as to, you know, I don't know, Mike, what are your thoughts? Does it matter? Is it just a fun thing? Is it a good thing that because Halfley is close with Wanstead and Wanstead's close with Jimmy and Jimmy recommended Aikman and Aikman helped hire, you know, Sullivan, like, is all of that stuff a good thing for the Dolphins? Does it even matter?
Two answers. One, it can't hurt. And two, just because we got new voices in the room, it can only be a good thing. This was an organization that needed to sort of get rid of everybody at the top level, and they kind of have. John Eric Sullivan has brought in a whole bunch of new scouts, new people around him. It needed to happen. It was a lot of the same. I mean, it's been 25 years since won a playoff game. And I'm not saying it's all the fault of Chris Greer. It's all this guy's fault. But a lot of those people have been there for a very long time. And it can't hurt. Now, I know, you know, if you start saying names like Wanstead and Jimmy, but that's still going back almost 30 years at this point.
You're right.
So it is. Old is new again. So it's like, fine, bring him in. I know, exactly. But no, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. New voices in the room, new ideas, try something different because status quo wasn't really working.
Right. Except I can touch on this subject, man. You know, look, just because I don't like Jimmy I didn't touch on the Halfley situation.
Oh, you must have loved Jimmy the other night wearing a Knicks shirt since you hate the Knicks, too. You must have loved that.
He's a certified clown. That's what he is. But anyhow.
Knicks are down 30, by the way. Anyway,
Exactly. But, you know, I think it's a great resource. I love Wanstead. So if Wanstead has told Halfley, you know,
it's her guy, right?
to connect with I don't know where the hell he's from, but it's probably somewhere, probably more West Virginia than Pittsburgh, but that's okay. If Wanstead, you know, connected Half with Jimmy has been a model of success. I'm not going to sit here and just because I don't like him personally doesn't mean he hasn't been successful at what he does, man. You know, I mean, hell, Jimmy built one of the best defenses in Miami Dolphin history. I mean, the Killer Bees, of course, were great. The no-name defense, obviously better, you know, but at the same time, though, the defense that he had was absolutely incredible. So I think the fact that, you know, you got a young Halfley, you know, driving down to see Jimmy, you know, him and John Eric Sullivan going down there to spend time with Jimmy, that's, you know, that's valuable information. And the fact that we've got coaches that aren't too vain or organizations not too vain to go down there and bounce that off of a guy that's done it right and gotten it right.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's gotten it right. We can't dispute Jimmy's, you know, records, you know, and that's great. So a sounding board like that is valuable. And, you know, and it sounds like they got a lot out of that trip.
Yeah.
You know, of course, Jimmy's ass ain't going to come up here because he's, you know, whatever, but they had to go see him, come kiss the ring. But I get it. It's all good. But they got a lot out of that, man. And I'm happy that they went down there. And I'm glad that he came back with a positive, you know, feedback from what Jimmy offered him, man. Because I don't care about what we did back when I played. All I care about is what we do now and what Half can use from a guy like Jimmy Johnson, Dave Wanstead, to make our team the team we want it to be moving forward because we've been trash.
Hot garbage. Hot garbage. Juice, it's a great point, Juice, that you brought up. And when Halfley says one of the things they discussed was how rough Jimmy's first year in Dallas was and then how he went on to win Super Bowls, it kind of shed some light on where their expectations are. You know, like obviously John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Halfley, there's not a coach on the planet, and we saw it with Brian Flores, no coach wants to lose games, even if it's going to benefit them and it's a great draft next year and all these other things. Like, that's great, and fans want to tank and all these. No coach wants to go in there and have that. His record, his career coaching record, starts this year. It doesn't start next year. It starts this season. So whatever he finishes, that's on him. That's going to be on his Wikipedia page for life, whatever his career coaching. And so those guys want to win as many games as possible and as quickly as possible. But now he's prepared for what, you know, because what the Cowboys, they win one game that first year?
1-15. Yep.
So, I mean, it was absolutely abysmal. And for him to have that resource to say, look, this is what we did, but this is what we did with it.
Yeah, they had the Herschel Walker trade, too, that really changed the organization right after that. Absolutely. You know what I mean? And, you know, Jimmy tried to do the same thing with Dan Marino, of course. He tried to trade Danny for the farm, you know, and that wasn't our owners weren't having it. So I get what you're saying, Big Seth. And, you know, if Jimmy was great at personnel, I think that Half and Sully are great at personnel. I think they're so far, they've, you know, as far as we know, they've hit a home run on personnel from either re-signing the guys we talked about or the draft picks that we got that I think we all love. If they can build it that way, and a, you know, low salary cap deal, we're gonna be in good shape with this crew right here, man. So I'm with you on that, man. So it's just all positive. I think any information, a first time NFL head coach, of course, Halfley's coach, you know, head coach in the college game, first time NFL head coach gets an opportunity like this, I think it's a big time opportunity to go down and talk to somebody like that. And Wanstead being probably his mentor, I'm calling his mentor, right? Was that what we
for sure? On? Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, Juan's just a great guy that had some success at all levels, but not great success. You know, not really in college or the pros. He was good, solid coach, but he's also a really good guy, you know, that could bounce it off both guys. Juan's a good guy. Jimmy's a you-know-what hole, and then we could put Halfley right in the middle of it, and I think we're good to go.
There it is. He tried to tell us. So, Drew, I want to get into the Van Horn.
Why are you trying to steal my track? No, that's not what it is.
I want to get into the legal zone in a moment. There's a question here from our buddy Andrew Crowell. Juice, can you talk about the attitudes of players at the start of camp and how it changes by the start of the season?
Yeah. The attitude right now is some guys are feeling pretty good about themselves coming out of these OTAs and mini camps. Some guys are not feeling so good, so they're going to be going in there and working their butts off right now to make sure they stay in shape. I think Half talked a lot about it, about guys that don't go do anything right now are going to be in trouble come training camp time. So you got to stay on the grind, even though you're quote unquote on vacation right now. You know, when we were done, I used to go like to Cancun or I go on a cruise, but every day I was working out and running because I know that if you don't come in shape, like Half said, you're going to end up trying to get in shape, but all these other guys are already in shape. So, you know, I think, you know, going into training camp, there's a lot of uncertainty because these guys have been in, you know, like what Jason Taylor called the, you know, the T-shirt and shorts Olympics or whatever it is, something right. like that. They're going to put pads on real soon. In the next few weeks, when they get in there, it's going to be pads. And pads change everything. Some guys are great. And I know I've played with so many really, really good players that were great in the OTAs or mini camps, and they were running routes and they were, you know, making plays. When the pads came on, a lot of things changed. And I'm telling you this, a lot of things are going to change when it comes to what we hear from reports and from training camp when the pads come on. So, you know, these guys better be wary of the fact that there's nobody that has an upper hand on anybody other than the guys that, you know, got new contracts, new deals, have been around. But everybody else, be ready for, you know, what's going to happen because it's going to be a whole different world once training camp starts.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Great stuff. Good question. Great answer. All right, let's roll into the Van Horn Law Group Legal Zone. And Chad Van Horn, there may not be a bigger story in sports other than Donald Trump putting the voodoo on the Knicks. There may not be a bigger story in all of sport than Brendan Sorsby and the Texas Tech Red Raiders right? Gambling, suspension, lawsuits, Lubbock, Texas, five judges that all are Texas Tech grads, and eligibility restored, and college football has lost their minds. So can you talk a little bit about the legalities of it all? And then, you know, we've got ADs from other and coaches from other universities saying, we're not going to schedule Texas Tech if this is the way they're
moving. That's forward. The part that drives me nuts. And then, I got something to say on that.
And then Tech is like, okay, yeah, so that's collusion. Well, you know, we'll have our lawyer, Chad Van Horn, be in touch with you. Talk to us about not just how it's impacting sport, but the legalities of it all.
Well, before we get into that, how many here have downloaded one of the apps that you can bet on? I'll raise my hand. I have. Everybody
I are. Probably downloaded, yeah.
Not
okay.
I.
Okay, you haven't. How many of us have eligibility left to play in the NCAA? Because I still have some years.
I have all 4 years left. Yeah,
this is the only one that has a bit.
Use all mine up, Chad. Use all mine up.
Hey,
I didn't get a COVID year, so.
But hey, maybe you get one now. But this is not about one quarterback.
Can I redshirt for 3 decades? Is that what? Am I a?
But no, legitimately, like this is going to be a documentary one day because this is about gambling, NIL money, addiction, court injunctions, whether the NCAA actually has any power left. I mean, there's so much going on because he was ruled ineligible by the NCAA after gambling violations, as you talked about. They say he placed $90,000 worth of bets, including bets tied to Indiana when he was there. Now, this is not talking about when OJ was in school. We're talking about parking tickets, free meals, maybe some free ice cream at the creamery, I think is
the right one. Right, the creamery, yes. The
creamery, like that's a come up. But this is not some old school NCAA nonsense where a kid gets punished for some bullshit. This is Pete Rose like gambling. And gambling is the brightest red line in sports. Especially when we're talking about a quarterback, because the quarterback touches the ball every play.
Yep.
Right? And if fans start wondering whether the quarterback has money on the game, the whole sport has a problem. But as you said, Seth, here's the twist. Sorsby went to court, and a Texas judge, I don't know where he went to school. He might have went to Texas Tech. Gave him an injunction. And what that means for now is the NCAA cannot enforce the punishment while this lawsuit plays out. So let's be clear. That does not mean he's won. The judge basically said, hold on, NCAA, we're going to pause this while the courts figure this out. So some people
can say, January.
Exactly. So some people can say this is a win because we're not going to figure it out for the next year or so.
Right.
And guess what happens after that year? The season's over. I understand he's still suspended for 2 games that going into the season. And I think Mike might be bringing this point up where the Big 12 came in and they talked about boycotting, talked about all this bullshit. But did he play for a Big 12 school before? Weren't they sitting at
Cincinnati? What? Yeah.
Right? Yeah, right. Did he?
Then he got the ADs from the SEC who want to take a moral high ground. The SEC.
Get him, Mike.
The SEC.
Get him, Mike.
Mike,
Mike's about to go on a rant.
Mike, I'm going to save some time and cede it to you at the end of this because I want you to do my rant because your voice just does it better than mine.
He right? has the perfect rant voice for sure.
First off, from the Big
definitely,
12,
definitely has it. So,
schools in the Big 12 who break every rule that's out there, but the SEC invented this when it comes to cheating, let's be honest. Yeah. And you got the AD of Georgia who's had some of his football players the past 5 years literally kill people driving 125 miles an hour, literally kill people. He wants to stand on his soapbox and say, enough's enough. This kid can't play. Seriously? Look, I get it. The kid shouldn't play. The kid shouldn't play. But I don't want to hear any AD from the Big 12, and especially the SEC. The SEC. Talk about any of this nonsense about we're not going to play Texas Tech. Clean up your own house first. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey, and I could skip through a big part of it because that's where I was. Is like, I get it. Gambling is serious. This is not great. He's going to rehab. I believe it is a disease. But this is a problem for the NCAA, because if this ruling stands, and that's why the NCAA has to appeal this, if this ruling stands, it's going to create a really bad precedent where students can get away with this, where I'm gambling. If I get caught, I go to rehab, everything's cool, right? And obviously, this is a mainstream, because he could be a first round pick one day. We don't know if it's going to happen. We'll see what happens with. I know they're talking about the supplemental draft. He's not going to deal with that anymore. But if he has a great season, it could be a first round pick. I think that and OJ, you'd be in the best position to tell me if he performs well, stays clean, does great. I think that he can leave this behind him, and I think America is a great place for second chances, leaving things behind, especially when you're a young adult, where there's all these things out there. There's billboards where telling you, hey, go on this. So I hope that is. But I am a college football fan as well, so I don't want college football ruined.
Yeah, you know, Ted, honestly, this would never be a problem if these guys weren't making so much damn $90,000.
Bingo.
I mean, we bet $2. Like, you know, we used to bet our weekend money at Penn State on, you know, what time the flight was going to land. It was like $12.50, and we were like, all right, I can't wait to get your $12.50.
Juice, me and you bet a dollar sitting at Doc D's bar on who's going to score the next basket.
We sure did. And we bet a dollar on the bull riding. We bet a dollar on – we bet a dollar. We can't go farther than these dudes with 90 Gs, man. I remember a quarterback back in Ohio State. You guys remember Art Sleaster?
Of course.
Art Sleaster, yeah. Art was another quarterback that had a gambling problem, Tad. So I agree. It's definitely a problem. But the amount of money these guys have in their pockets is probably like a drop in the bucket. But here's the thing about it. I'm a huge Pete Rose fan. Pete Rose would be in the Hall of Fame.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Pete Rose, you know, I get what he did, but there was nobody that deserves it. I mean, there's other guys that deserve it just as much, but nobody more than Pete Rose. But when you start doing shit like this, bro,
ding, ding.
You know, it's a conflict of interest, obviously, man, because you do. Like, I think you said it best, Seth, and you say the ball's in his hands all the time. And
well, Chad said it. Yeah. I mean, he touches the ball in every play.
You can determine anything. Third and long, hell, I could throw it short, throw it out of bounds, I could throw an interception, I can do whatever the hell I want to do. You control the outcome of this football game.
Yep.
When anybody has that much control of outcomes of football games, you know what I mean? That's a problem. Referees in basketball. Referees have the most control in basketball. 50-50 calls in basketball, charge, block. You know what I mean? Is it a foul, not a foul? Those things are, like, huge. If right now, like, Carl Anthony Towns had two fouls in the first 5 minutes. That changed the whole outcome of the game.
Yep.
Of this series, you know? Whether they're good fouls or not, but a referee can determine that. A quarterback's got that same type of power, you know?
And Juice, to your point, I think one of the bigger things going on is these players now have the money to litigate these issues.
Yeah.
Well, right. Back in the day, you just got bullied, right? Because you couldn't.
Okay. You're like, okay, whatever you say, I'm done. Yeah.
Well, what lawyer can represent you? I mean, and you can't even give like future income to these lawyers.
Or Chad, some of them are backed by law firms. The law firms are who's giving them the NIL money.
Right.
I think I forget who said it. And I think I remember who said it, but there's one. Somebody said one day is like, if you borrow like $100,000 from the bank and you can't pay it, they have all the leverage on you. But if you borrow $100 million, you have all the leverage on them because if you don't pay it, it's going to take down the bank.
Right.
Right. So these law firms.
We're just calling Chad Van Horn.
These law firms that are investing in these players, like they're putting a lot of money, a lot of effort. It's not a small thing to them, so they need to see them succeed. So when he's going to his team, he's like, "All right, what are we going to do about this?" Instead of like, "What are you going to do about it?" Right?
Right.
Like it's a we issue, and the law firm stepping up, like, "Well, we're going to sue, and we're going to find Texas Tech judges, and we're going to we're going to do everything we need to do to make sure this has." And I'm sure they have a crisis management team and everything behind it. So it really is a a whole new dynamic behind college football.
It's Steph, they better find Texas Tech judges, because they better not find University of Texas judges. They better not find Baylor judges. They better not find a University of Houston judges, because they'll be coming for them. They hate each other. They all hate each other in their
state.
They
did it in Lubbock, Juice. They did it in Lubbock. They were all Texas Tech fans for sure. Yeah, great stuff. I have a feeling that we may get another Van Horn Law Group Legal Zone out of this at some point down the line, because it's just that wild of a story. All right, let's roll into I tried to tell y'all. Now, Juice, Savak has decided there's a new way to do this. Like, it's the new way to do it. So my question for you is, the normal order of the universe is you always kick this segment off. How do you want to handle it? Dealer's choice, as the guy sitting in that first seat, how do you want to handle it, given that Savak is got another produced piece that is...
Well, here's my question. How the hell am I not in on how this was done, man? Am I not part of this fucking show or not?
Ding!
What do you mean? Like, I didn't decide.
I mean, you both were in cahoots, obviously.
So there's
Mike might be in cahoots too.
First time hearing of it, Juice. First time hearing.
All right, Mike
washed his hands of it. So the reason I know, I was in Riverside earlier today working on another podcast, and then I saw that Savak. I haven't watched it. I don't know what it's about. I'm just telling you. I thought I was doing you a solid by telling you that there's another pre.
Go ahead, Savak. I'm canceling mine. I'm canceling mine. I'm trying to take. Go ahead, Savak.
You're canceling.
I'm not doing mine. I'm not doing mine.
You can't quit.
Okay, I fucking quit. I'm about to watch the game.
He just pulled a Tyreek Hill. He's leaving the field.
He sure did. Now, I can assure you, nobody else is in on it. This is something I've been doing myself.
You pulled out Tucker Brown, actually.
No, yeah.
Okay. You might as well play it now.
Play it now.
I tried to tell y'all, you really don't respect fundamentals until you see them up close. So I had the magnificent opportunity to attend the Firekeepers Casino 400 at Michigan International Speedway. And I can hear you already saying, geez, Savak, what was that like? In a word? In fewer words.
I need some words.
That is too good of a burnout.
What an amazing experience. Truly, if y'all get the opportunity, it was a blast. It's even more fun when your favorite driver makes a bit of history in the process. So, against the general consensus, I'm a Denny Hamlin fan. Sorry, he's great. And he's arguably the Dan Marino of NASCAR, best driver to have never won a Cup Series championship, and even at age 45, he continues to get better and better. 2 weeks in a row, he qualified for the top spot. 2 weeks in a row, something dropped him to the back of the pack, and 2 weeks in a row, he somehow fought his way back up to the front to win. That second one, tying a record held by his former teammate and recently dearly departed friend Kyle Busch for all-time Cup Series wins. It was exciting, it was dramatic, it was educational. And what really stood out to me, and what has truly captured my attention, is how much of a team sport NASCAR really is. Folks don't think about it, but there are so many more people affecting the outcome than just the driver. Spotters, crew chiefs, pit crews, which are generally made up of former college athletes from all over. I'm talking football, basketball, baseball, wrestlers, they're all out there. Every single person doing their part, and if just one of them screws up, their car isn't winning. Made me think back to the preceding era of Dolphins football, where it seemed like the franchise was more concerned with chasing the fastest car instead of building the best team. And as any of the best teams will tell you in NASCAR, fans obsess over drivers. Good organizations focus on assembling great crews. And watching these guys out there working like that gave me new perspective and a greater appreciation for Sully and Half's vision. While everything on the outside is focusing on the QB, the driver, if you will. Those guys are thinking about the details. Do we have the fastest tire changes? Can we find a bigger jack, man? How can we fine-tune this engine to get the maximum performance out of it with Malik Willis behind the wheel? Essentially, can we win if we focus on the fundamentals? Well, those fellas seem to think so. NASCAR professionals would agree, and I tried to tell you.
And there it is. Oh, did we lose?
Oh, he left the room. That was a mic drop.
I thought he did. A mic drop. Very good. Nice.
Very, very, very nice, man.
A muted mic too, Savak. Truly a mic drop.
Very well done.
Very well done. Juice says.
Well produced.
Juice, you're up.
Nah, I told you I'm done.
Oh, you tried to tell us that you're not doing it.
Nah, I tell you, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it in pro. I'm gonna hire a professional. Savak, yeah, I can't use Savak. He's already produced his own shit. But
I'm gonna let you have that one.
Nah, get Dingy, man. Get the hell out, man. I don't give a damn. I tried to tell y'all that y'all thought South Florida was going to feast again this year. Nah, not the Dolphins, not the Heat, not the Panthers. All three of our squads are sitting home watching the playoffs on TV in the same damn offseason. Watching the Knicks and Carolina and all the other teams we hate compete really sucks. That's a Miami sports fan tragedy. A triple miss like we ain't seen in a minute. The vibes in the 305 right now, rough. Real rough. Dolphins. Another year, another missed playoff postseason, 7-10, third in the East, out early again, coaching changes, front office, you know, shakeups, the whole rebuild talk kicking in. Two when the boys are out and their efforts weren't enough. Extending that playoff winless drought, you know, even longer than we've seen in a long time. We were built for contention, but injuries inconsistently in AFC. The AFC was tough. Brian said, not so fast, my friends. Look at the Heat. The Heat, 43-39, playing again, but couldn't punch the ticket. First time missing the real playoffs since 2019. Supposed crew scrapped all year, but it just didn't fall their way. Culture is still there, but the results? Pain. Pure pain for a franchise that's been so resilient. Panthers, back-to-back champs. Lost in the Stanley Cup Finals the year before they won their championships. First time since 2019 for the defending champs to bow out like that. 40-38-4 out of the mix. The hockey world is shook, but Florida fans, we feel that one even deeper than the other teams. Three powerhouse franchises, three different sports, one brutal offseason where the dance floor stayed empty. No deep runs, no banner chases, just questions, cap headaches, draft boards, and free agency prayers. But listen, this is South Florida. We are built different. We've seen the lows and come roaring back. I tried to tell y'all before, patience in the process, trust the culture, keep building bridges and building and bridging gaps, Big Seth. The same way we grind through the heat, no pun intended, is the same way we reload after every hit. Biggie said it best, Chad Van Horn. It was all a dream. Are you serene? No. But dreams turn into reality when you put in that work. The offseason is here for a reason, to reload, refocus, and remind everybody why Miami sports hit different when it clicks. To the fans hurting right now, I feel you. I live the Dolphins' life. The highs are sweeter after nights like these. Use this pain as fuel. Next season, we're coming. All three squads got something to prove. South Florida don't stand down. We rise. But what I'm really trying to tell you is that South Florida residents, and I don't care where you came from, need to cheer for the local teams. Missing the playoffs down here hurts all of us. It hurts the bars, the restaurants, the hotels, and much more. So those of you that don't root for the local team, I hope you're enjoying your time off. And the less money you are making and the high gas prices you're paying as you're enduring going to work for less loot. keep your old town alliances all you want, but don't complain. And for those of you locals, I've got something for you too. Please, when you applaud other teams, shame on you, and Savak, fuck you. I'm from not you personally, Savak. I'm talking about the locals that root for other teams that are from here. Fuck them, man. I'm from Cleveland.
He's talking again.
I'm from Cleveland, and I'm not going back. I am a South Florida guy, and I love all of our teams, even the Marlins. I tried to tell y'all.
There it is. I am glad that you shared that with us, Juice. I think we would have all missed out.
Strongly agree.
No,
Getting everybody in on it. Chad Van Horn, do you have a cross examination?
I got a quick one. I'll put this picture up here real quick.
That's the best picture.
So my daughter just wrote this poem. It says, "Mom says Nat, Dad says Knicks. I've seen enough. Spurs in six. That's all I got."
There it is.
Oh, nice.
All right, Chad.
He's looking that way right now.
He ain't wrong.
Very nice. Michael Leva, what did you try to tell us?
All right. So the Miami Dolphins haven't won a Super Bowl since the 1973 season. They haven't been to the Super Bowl since 1984 season. We're about to go on 26 to soon to be 27 years where they haven't won a playoff game. An organization that's always teasing but never pleasing. Being a fan of the Dolphins, just as Juice has said, of late has not been easy. And I know many Miami Dolphins fans have felt hopeless over the past 20-plus years that we're never going to be good again and there's no light at the end of the tunnel. But I, Michael Leave, am here to tell all Dolphins fans, keep hope alive. And we need to look no further than to the NBA for inspiration. Currently, we're in the middle of the NBA Finals. We have two very different teams fighting for the Larry O'Brien Trophy, but there are parallels here with our Miami Dolphins. Let's start with the San Antonio Spurs, a very young team, the second youngest team to ever make the NBA Finals. And you look at our Miami Dolphins team, a very young roster filled with a bunch of rookies and second-year players. I'm not saying that the Miami Dolphins are going to win the Super Bowl next year, but I'm saying in the next 2 to 3 years, could the Miami Dolphins be the NFL's version of the San Antonio Spurs? Hey, we hope. Now, I know what some of you are saying out there, the Spurs have a legitimate superstar on the roster who is the envy of every team in the league, and the Dolphins don't have a superstar of that level. And you're right, they don't. I will say this, though. If this season goes as expected, maybe, just maybe, the Miami Dolphins have the next great quarterback and their version of Wembanyama, who, side note, by the way, and I don't care what you said today, Jews, I saw your post on social media. He's a dirty player, and he's a little bit of a man. Never trust the French, and you know what? Screw Wembanyama. They might win this series. It looks like they are. But don't tell me he ain't a dirty player. And, you know, he gave an elbow to the guy from Minnesota. Poor Jalen Brunt. Never trust the French. That's a side note. Now, on the other hand, we got the Knicks. And the Knicks are more relatable to Miami Dolphins fans. Okay? Knicks fans and fans of the Dolphins have a lot in common. Both long-suffering. Fan base, who has been dying to see their team win for, like, 50 years. Both teams have a fan base that sometimes on social media gets a little out of control and might act a little delusional at times. They are two franchises that were great in the 70s, pretty good in the 90s, but never got over the hump, and they haven't been very good much since. And these two organizations have a lot in common as well. Two franchises with off-the-field scandals with players the past 20-plus years, scandals with front office executives the past 20-plus years, and, you know, they got two crummy owners. Let's just call it what it is. Not hating, just stating. Stephen Ross and James Dolan, two tone-deaf, out-of-touch owners who've been clueless since the day they each bought their teams. Okay? If James Dolan can get his team, it ain't looking good. At least two wins away from an NBA championship. If James Dolan can get his team to the NBA Finals, Dolphins fans, we got hope. That means Stephen Ross could even luck into one of these at some point in his life. Maybe not a championship, but at worst, a Super Bowl appearance. Now, I know the NBA and the NFL are two very different sports. But at the end of the day, sports are kind of sports. You get a roster of very good players. You get a head coach who can push the right buttons. And you get an owner who just shuts up and stays out of the damn way. So why not us? Now, it ain't going to be this year. But if a young roster like the Spurs can win a championship or make a championship run, why can't Miami in a few years? Well, if a franchise with a bad owner that's been consistently down in the dumps for two decades can finally get there and get close, why can't us? Dolphins fans, look at the NBA and this NBA Finals for a little bit of sliver of hope. Because the Miami Dolphins are young, maybe we're the Spurs, or maybe we just get lucky and the owner doesn't mess up. So why not us?
Close it.
There it is.
That's it.
I tried to tell y'all.
Oh, I tried to tell you.
He was confused with a rant. He got all thrown off with the owner, the whole thing. Very
great
nice,
stuff,
very
Mike.
Nice
great stuff, Mike.
It is dirty, OJ. Wembenyan is dirty. Just own
no, he's not.
It. Yes,
no, he's
he
not.
Is.
No, he's
yes,
not. He they beat the hell out of Wembenyama every single night. They beat the hell out of him.
Looks like, yeah.
Savak is dirtier than Wemby, honestly. Like, let's
yeah, that's true.
They beat him up every single night. They grab on and they pull on and they push him around every single night. And what are we supposed to do? We're giving the Statue of Liberty back? You know what I mean? You're already trying to take it down. You don't trust the French? You know what I mean? Trump trying to take it down. What the hell is going on?
Don't give Trump any ideas.
Louisiana return. We could just return Louisiana.
Right.
Well, I don't know that we're going to solve that problem tonight. But, gentlemen, I tried to tell y'all that Dave Hyde is one of the most important voices in and around South Florida sports. Unfortunately, it seems as if I should have been trying to tell the Sun Sentinel. Although, how in the world do they not already know this? For those of you who are just catching up, yesterday, the award-winning columnist who has spent the past 36 years writing about South Florida sports for the South Florida Sun Sentinel tweeted that the paper had just laid him off. That's it. A man who has made his living for nearly four decades writing hundreds and hundreds of thousands of words, maybe even more, brought his Sentinel career to a close in less than 500 characters. And what does that say about the paper's character? Look, I don't know any of the details. When things like this happen, oftentimes there are great severance packages, buyouts, mutual partings of ways, and all the other things that come with the business of business. And sometimes there's none of it. The context of Dave's tweet and the words like laid off lead me to believe there wasn't a whole lot of warm and fluffy. And that bothers me most. I'm a firm believer that there's a right way and a wrong way to handle most things, and this feels all kinds of wrong. Those who've responded to my own angry tweet with lessons of corporate America, hedge funds, and dying industry, it's all accurate. I don't disagree with you. There's no argument here, but that's the what. And if I'm looking for, if I'm going to talk about this in terms of the what, that's what the beat writers talk to me about. They write about the what. Writing a game story, telling us the final score, and how many yards and touchdowns a Devon Achane ran for, that's the what. Then you get the all 22 breakdowns by a million people now. That's the how. But the why and the what does it mean? That's always been what's intrigued me. And I don't think I'm alone. There's a reason the title of columnist was once revered like a journalism PhD. Even in today's world of 24-hour news cycles, live tweeting, live streaming, and no shortage of fan content creators, it has always been the columnists who provide a perspective that few others can. And Dave Hyde did just that in this market as well as anyone. The columnist asks the tough questions, calls for change, challenges the norm. They also challenge us to think and to look beyond the box score, and they do it fearlessly. Perhaps that's the sad irony here, is that Hyde's run is coming to the finish line not long after Chris Greer, the general manager whose head he called for, turned in his playbook as well. But the point that I'm making is that you guys thought of it, Hyde wrote it. Superstar players, billionaire owners, legendary head coaches, or iconic team presidents, Dave Hyde was not afraid to challenge them when things didn't make sense, nor praise them when they did. And good, bad, or indifferent, he was always direct but fair, honest in his writing and perspective, but never blinded by his own agenda or clout. Dave is also constantly curious. While steadfast in his beliefs, I can assure you that every PR man and woman in this town, past and present, would say he was willing to ask, to give you the opportunity to tell him why he should see something differently, oftentimes even before he went to print. Now, they may not have won him over every time, but they were given the chance to do so. Dave was also open to ideas. He was unmotivated by captivating contrarian cliques that seem to drive so many writers today, and he was willing to tell a feel-good story as easily as he would bring you doom and gloom. And let me stop using the word was, because Dave is. While I'm interested in seeing what is next on his journey, I have no idea what that will be. I just know that there will be a next. And that's because Dave has never mailed it in. The bottom line is this. In the world of sports where winning is everything, we all lost yesterday in a massive way. I recognize there's no shortage of content being published. The Sentinel will probably continue to print papers and post web stories for years to come. David Fornes and our guy Chris Perkins are going to do a fine job with their Dolphins coverage. But as I've told you in this space before, new doesn't always mean better. Activity doesn't always equate to productivity. What's the other one? Price is what you pay, value is what you get, and as this cliche machine continues to churn, it ain't over until it's over. But unfortunately, Dave Hyde's Sun Sentinel tenure is over, and we can only hope that one of South Florida's most important sports voices finds a new home and does so soon. I tried to tell y'all.
Yeah. Now, we're seeing critical thinking is dead, so... And
big ups to Dave.
That's great. I'm seeing it from a law standpoint, and we're seeing it from a journalistic standpoint. I spoke to a Sun Sentinel reporter today who has been there for, I think, 40 years. And I hope that we're able to keep these people around, because it'll show the next generation. You can't just put things into ChatGPT or anything and let it think for you. You right. need that critical thinking. You need to be able to ask questions. So great take, Seth.
Yeah.
Thank you, absolutely. Sir. I appreciate it.
Loved it.
Well, we ran a little long tonight, but I think we all had a lot to get off of our chests or off of our hard drives, Savak. So you got, there it is, rocking the fish tank. I like it. Yeah, we got to figure out what to talk about as they go on summer break. But we will. We'll be right back here next Wednesday. I hope everyone checked out our Teron Armstead episode. If you haven't, you can go listen to it on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from an audio perspective. And tomorrow, great. Mike, are we dropping the video tomorrow right here on
9 a.m. 9 a.m.
All right. So if you watched it and you want to see it, or if you listened and you want to see it, or if you haven't listened at all but you prefer to watch, you can do that right here on Dolphins Talk YouTube.
I'm not coming next Wednesday, Big Seth.
You're done?
I'm boycotting.
What are you boycotting exactly?
The show.
Right, I understand, but what is it about the show?
He wants to go first when it comes time. Do I try to tell y'all? He got one second.
I gave him dealer's choice.
You did. I'm just boycotting because I can, Big Seth.
Just looking for something to boycott?
Yes.
I can accept that if you get one of those sandwich boards and walk up and down like the protesting, when they were holding out. Yeah, absolutely.
I'll be here.
I'm gonna be outside of Savak's place, man. If he starts with these produced pieces, I'm gonna be protesting his spot.
Right, we might.
I mean,
you guys should do that.
The reason we run 30 minutes late is because his 30 minute spot. Shit,
really good.
The problem is you got to go to Michigan to do it. I don't know when.
They got a studio out there.
The electric's cheaper up there, I think.
Too good. Oh, just get us out of here, man.
Hey, everybody, thanks for diving in.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank.